back to observations. Kirk, after recognizing that what parar means, particularly when it's negated, and particularly when it is influenced by the imperfect conjugation, which means it's ongoing with unfolding consequences. And God explained, he, Amar, declared and promised, I would never break, never split into two, never violate, never make ineffectual, nor ever nullify my covenant.
Yes.
That means that Pauline Christianity is a absolute, cruel hoax. It's reprehensible. It's based entirely, it's the very foundation of it. And it's New Testament. It's gospel of grace. It's new covenant is a lie.
Yeah, forever means, you know, beyond time and space. I mean,
right. Yeah, after conveying it through the imperfect conjugation, just in case you didn't understand the influence of the congregation, he wrote La Olam. La Olam, it means for all eternity.
Yeah.
For the entire duration of time.
Yes.
Is there really an end to forever?
No.
I mean,
no.
There's no. Not an end.
Olam is infinite in time. What he's saying here is very different than his Torah. Remember when Yosha made a comment on the Torah and said that every yod and tittle of the Torah will remain full in force so long as the heavens and earth exist? Now, by saying that, he's not saying that the letters, the yods and tittles, the yods, the smallest letters, the first letter in Yahweh's name, and the tittle is the strokes that comprise the other letters. He's not saying that these letters that comprise the words, which comprise the sentences, which comprise the statements in the Torah, would be nullified when the heavens and earth are gone.
No.
All he said is that while the heavens and earth are here, not one of them, not even the smallest nuance of the smallest letter or the smallest stroke of a letter, is going to be annulled, changed, nullified, abolished, everything that Parar just communicates. But it's very different, because he was speaking of the Torah then. Now, and of course, the heavens and earth still exist, so every letter and every stroke of every letter of the Torah is still fully in effect. But this is different. In the sense that what he's saying here is that his covenant will remain intact. His covenant will remain one and only for all of time. His covenant will never be nullified for the entirety of infinity. And the reason he's saying that is that it's a very subtle point. It's way beyond what a Christian can possibly understand. But what he's saying is that there are aspects of his Torah teaching that will not be germane once God creates a new universe. That they are full in effect now because they're the only means of getting to know him and engaging in relationship with him and therefore being saved by him. They are, as it is written, the only means to come to know God and engage in a relationship with him. But as we move into the new universe and we become seven-dimensional constructs, and we witness a creation of a new universe and of life, and spend time with Yahweh, we are still going to need his guidance and instruction.
Sure.
So that we exercise free will in a reasoned and intelligent way. We maximize our enjoyment of the new universe and of our relationship with him. And so we're going to need guidance. But the last thing we're going to need is, what are the consequences of being religious? No one religious.
Sure.
No one have any interest in being religious.
These problems.
So all of the problems that are discussed in the Torah and the consequences of those problems will no longer be necessary for us. So that's why he talks about the Torah capital T existing so long as the heavens and earth exist. So that because he tells us upon his return that he's going to write his Torah instructions inside of us. And so at that point, it's for the next 1,000 years, it's his existing Torah to provide guidance and salvation and covenant relations with everyone who is alive for the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah, of the Shabbat. But for those of us who are already spiritual beings at that point, post the Teruah harvest, it's the guidance, the Torah guidance that we're going to need to enjoy the universe.
Right.
And being able to explore the universe. But in this particular case, there's no reason to make a distinction between the transition of existing covenant through year 7,000 Yah, that would be 3033 on our pagan calendars, which won't even exist at the time.
No.
But that there is a transition between Yahweh's Torah lowercase t and Yahweh's teaching uppercase t.
Yeah.
But with the covenant, there is no transition. You notice that there is no transition here. The one and only covenant family exists forever. Without any split, without any break, without becoming two, without ever being nullified. That's because Yahweh's family, his covenant, is forever. By the way, when covenant was written, barithe, which means my covenant,
right,
was it singular or plural?
Rithe is plural.
Yeah. Well, no. Baethe is my covenant. It's singular.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah.
No, YM would make it plural. The Y just makes it first. Y makes it first person.
Yeah.
So it's a first person pronoun. So it's my covenant.
Yeah, it has one plan.
If you put the Hebrew pronouns are attached to the nouns, and if you put the first person before the noun. Then, like, for example, Ihaya, when Yahweh says, Ihaya Asher Ihaya, I am who I am. I am existing relationally and beneficially. I was, I will be, and I am. So that's Ihaya. That's the pronoun before the verb Haya. In this case, the pronoun follows Bereth, which makes it covenant of mine. In English, we would write my covenant. In Hebrew, it literally reads covenant of mine. And it's singular. Bereth, covenant, singular. Absolute. E, the letter Y, Yahweh's hand, of mine.
Well, I don't want to flog a dead horse, but is there any way that you can entertain any idea where y'all would have two simultaneous plans working? I mean, he covers it in with Abraham is my family, which all the descendants of him, the Israel and Yehudim, and everyone, Goyim or Goy, that are with you.
No. He says the Torah is for all people.
No need for another.
He says Pesach is for all people, which is the doorway to life. The covenant is for all. The Torah is for all, and the Moed Mikra, the invitation is to be called out. They are for all.
So you'd be asking God, though. You'd be asking Yahweh to do two extraordinary things. Like one's not enough.
Yeah, but by the way, while we say they're for all, they really aren't.
Anyone
for all
that accepts the terms.
Right. God doesn't have a Gentile plan.
No.
He has a plan for Yisrael and Yahudah, Yahudim. And if you want to be part of that plan as a Goyim Gentile, you're welcome. But what you have to do is distance yourself from all Goyim influences, government, religion, societal, cultural, militaristic. You have to distance yourself from the things that would classify you as a Goyim to become a Yisraelite and Yehudim.
But the hard news is so did they. He couldn't get...
Yes, so did they. So did they. Right.
They just keep walking away.
Yeah, Judges was written 3,400 years ago. 3,400 years ago. And the religion that Yahweh discussed through the Judges and the prophet Samuel, who was the last of the Judges, the religion he described, its closest analog today is Christianity. At the time, it was the religion that was born and bred in Babylon and that was accepted by the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Greeks, the Romans, and now the Roman Catholics. That is the religion he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same religion.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, just to connect that dot, I mean, to me, that's... Most people never do. They keep thinking you get fixated in your head that he's talking about. He's always attacking one of the Jewish religions.
No, Judaism didn't exist. Yeah. Judaism absolutely and unequivocally did not exist at this point.
No Essenes, no whatever.
No, there was no aspect, of it whatsoever. Now, here's the continuation into Eshtart. It says, and they actually rejected, continuously abandoning their relationship with Yahweh. And they habitually served and were compelled to literally worship the Lord. Along with the Eshtarts, the queens of heaven, the mothers of God, and the virgins with child. Thereby kindling the continual displeasure, the genuine resentment, and the resolute anger of Yahweh with Yisrael. And therefore he gave them into the hands of the plunderers. So they have raided, pillaged, looted, and ransacked them, surrendering and selling them into the hands of their rancorous enemies from all around, so that they were not able to stand any longer with the approaching presence of their adversaries. That's Shaphat, to decide by exercising good judgment. Judges 2, 13, and 14. Now, here are lots of interesting thoughts. The first, if you are religious according to God, you are azabing him. To azab in Hebrew means to forsake, to neglect,
right,
to reject. So, because they were compelled to worship the Lord, by so doing, they were rejecting Yahweh. Now, how many people call God the Lord?
Everybody.
I mean, all Orthodox Christians?
Uh-huh.
All Roman Catholics?
Mm-hmm.
All Protestant Christians?
Everyone.
Most Muslims?
Yeah.
And most rabbinic Jews?
That's true.
So yeah. If you're compelled to serve and to worship the Lord, you are rejecting and abandoning Yahweh. Whoa. That's serious stuff, isn't it?
That's deadly stuff.
Yeah, in fact, he has religion encapsulated in two names, Baal, which means the Lord,
mm-hmm.
and the Ashtarts.
Uh-huh.
That is the consort of Baal, the consort of the Lord. That's the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God. That's Ishtar, the basis of Easter. This is the basis of the Rosary. To Mary, this, the ichthus, the fish symbol of Christianity, all derived from her.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday worship derived from her. The nativity derived from her. Pictures of Mary as the Mother of God, Queen of Heaven, to whom you pray with the little statues in front of the shrines
mm-hmm.
are all based on Eshtart, Ishtar. And this is the religion where God's name is uniformly changed to the Lord, and where there is a Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, Virgin and Child, with a Easter and Christmas. What religion is that?
It's always Christianity. They took it hook, line, and sinker and built on it.
Right. So it was a religion practiced at the time by the Israelites. Why? Because it was the religion that the adversary conceived in Babylon, that the Israelites experienced when they were in Egypt. Yeah. Which is the religion that was being practiced in Canaan, which was the religion of the Philistines, which was the religion of the Canaanites, which was later the religion expounded upon philosophically by the Greeks, then imposed on the world by Imperial Rome and the Roman Catholic Church. And if you are going to embrace that religion, you're rejecting Israel. Now, the other thing, of course, is that people will say, you know, just laugh. Yeah, we'll laugh you off and say, oh, yeah, but that's not what it means to me. And, you know, how could all these people be wrong? And it certainly can't make God mad that I'm going to his church. Yeah, it does.
Right.
He didn't have a church.
Number one.
Yeah, and it does make him mad.
He does in the same place, you know, the fake one or me or one of your fake ones. You can't exist with me, with them.
Yeah, there's no misunderstanding what wa chirah amph means.
Yeah.
Thereby kindling the continual displeasure, the genuine resentment, and resolute anger of Yahweh.
Doesn't he say he's a jealous God and a zealous God?
Yeah. In fact, it means to enrage the ongoing burning jealousy. Yeah. Now, God, if you gave birth to a son and you poured your life into raising that child and giving that child everything that child would need to be successful, and your wife divorced you, and she married an irresponsible scumbag whose first inclination was to move to a different country and take your son away from you. How would you feel?
I'd feel horrible.
Yeah, that's
rejected probably. And want to anger.
Right. Right. And that's exactly what Yahweh was saying right here.
Sure. That's why it couches so many things in family terms that we do understand.
Yeah.
So you can understand what his rage is all about, what he's so mad
right.
about.
And here the divorce was to marry the whore of Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
To become a Christian.
Remember, that's the same guy that was in the garden.
Right. You know, for Yahweh to say that that Babylon exists all the way up to his return, which is finally upon his return, he says Babylon has fallen. Come out of her, my people, is the last cry that Yosha makes to the world, particularly to Yisrael. Come out of her. Come out of Babylon. For him to say that, and what it will be year 5,999, in fact, actually early in the year 6,000, which is 2033. So in our future, Yahweh is begging his people to come out of Babylon, and he finally, upon his return, he says that Babylon has fallen, and he associates Babylon with the adversary, Satan, as he does throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's based on Babel, which means with the Lord, ties in directly here. And it's the same root as Bible, as in the Christian Holy Bible, means confusion. To corrupt. If he's saying that he's calling you out of it at the very last moment of human history, and he says that Babylon hasn't fallen until his return, what in the hell is Babylon? It sure as hell isn't the ancient civilization of Babylon. What he's talking about is this religion, the influence of the Lord. Of the Queen of Heaven, of Mother of God, of the Virgin and Child, of Christmas and Easter and Sunday worship. What he's talking about.
Which is still the biggest religion in the world, bar none.
By far. By far. That's what he's talking about. That's the only rational conclusion that can be made, because when he talks about the last beast, the beast that treads upon the whole world, the most vicious beast that would ever live.
It's the Roman beast.
It's a beast that grows out of Imperial Rome, that exists right to the last day. And that beast was initiated in Babylon, became Babylonian, and then it became Persian, and then it became Greek, and then it became Imperial Rome, and then it became the Roman Catholic Church. It is that beast that is Babylon.
Yeah.
And God's not saying that, oh, well, it's cute. They mean well. Their heart
That's
is good.
Hard.
They do some nice things. No, he says this religious crap, this Christianity, disgusting, vile abomination of Christianity pisses me off. I hate it. I despise it.
Think about it.
God's not humored by it at all.
No, think about it. God hates everything you're doing.
Yeah, and he does.
The
more religious you are, the more he hates what you're doing. He actually doesn't know you. He hates what you're doing, but not an associate with you, because he doesn't know diddly squat about you. You are meaningless to him if you're a Christian. You're religious. Your leaders are meaningful to him because he's going to hold them accountable and send them off to Sheol with Shaul, Paul, for all eternity. But you, as a victim, as someone who has been duped, doesn't know who you are, doesn't care who you are. But what you're doing is disgusting. So he gave them into the hands of the plunderers who ransacked them. And that's really what religion does. Steals from people.
Sure.
You know, for 2,000 years, the Roman Catholic Church, well, most of it, for 1,800 years, the Roman Catholic Church plundered the people. That was lords and serfs. Look what Islam does to the people. Impoverishes them. Ransacks them. And, of course, if you're subjected to religion, you can't stand. That's what God says here. They were no longer able to stand.
Now, the next part is so fascinating. If you think about it, because when these things happen to you, you don't pray to me.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to help you. You know, you dug this hole down. And he doesn't do anything to them. He just walks away. If he doesn't protect you, you're doomed.
That's right. Yeah, he makes it, he says it that, well, it's actually in Samuel 8, towards the end of his, in fact, right, the first statement that he makes, after the Israelites say, okay, you told us these 12 things that are going to happen if we choose government over you, but we don't care, we're gonna choose to be like the Gentiles anyway. And then God says, then don't you ever come crying to me.
No, that's right.
Don't you ever come crying to me, man. I ain't gonna listen to it. I'm not going to listen to it. So the next line here is, then again, and to an increasing degree, the children of Israel. By the way, you know, Israel, the straightforward means of translating Israel from the positive sense is individuals, Ish, Sarah, who engage and endure, El, with God.
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah doesn't just mean engage and endure. It also means to wrestle and to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So Yisrael, like so many Hebrew terms, has a good and bad side depending on what your attitude is. So Yisrael can just as easily mean individuals who struggle with God,
mm-hmm.
who fight with God, who wrestle with God.
Well, in context of Jacob, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, think it through when you're a read Yisrael. It is the term that Yah uses of the descendants of Jacob when they're estranged from him and when they're united with him.
Right. Same term.
So it's their attitude that defines the definition of the word. So then again, and to an increasing degree, the children of Yisrael engaged in that which was, oh, it was okay because they meant well. It was not a big deal because, well, their heart was good. It was just fine because it made them feel good. But no, I don't think that's what he wrote, is it?
Well, if your spouse leaves you, her heart's not, you wouldn't think her heart is good.
It says, then again, to an increasing degree, the children of Israel engaged in that which was absolutely wrong, grievously evil, and horribly troubling, harmful, immoral, undesirable, worthless, improper, displeasing, malignant in the sight of Yahweh. What did they do that God thought was so injurious, so worthless, so immoral, so displeasing? By serving and worshiping the lords, along with the Ashtarts, the queens of heaven, the mothers of God, and the virgins with child. They were Christians. They were carrying around their Babel. They were with Baal.
Yeah. As a side note, you cannot translate this differently. You can't get anything else out of this than this.
No, I mean,
it's
you know,
me talking.
Yeah. Have they go to any interlinear, and pull up any group of Hebrew English dictionaries. Baal means the Lord. Ra is evil, distressful, harmful, immoral, undesirable, worthless, bad, displeasing, malignant, corrupt. That's what Ra means. So when you engage in serving and worshiping Abad, the lords, and the queens of heaven, the mothers of gods, and the virgins with child, which is Christianity, and don't think that because you're not a Orthodox Christian or a Roman Catholic Christian, which would be three-quarters of Christians, that you're in that one quarter that's an evangelical, and you never make a rosary prayer to Mary, you don't pray to Mary, you don't call Mary the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God, you don't have a statue of or even a picture of a virgin and child in your church, that you're exonerated here.
Because
your Babel... replaced Yahweh's name with the Lord 7,000 times. And because you still celebrate Christmas and Easter, which are both Ashtart, Queen of Heaven, Mother of God holidays.
Right.
So, you know, you're just as guilty as even the three-quarters who are Roman Catholics and Orthodox Christians. So you're maybe not just as guilty. Let's say that Roman Catholics and Orthodox Christians are 100% guilty here. As an evangelical Christian, you're only 95% guilty. Okay. You're only 95% wrong. you're only 95% wrong.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, ain't that swell?
Yeah, well, that's something to brag about.
All together with the gods of Abram, which means to exalt conflict, that would be most of the world today, with the gods of Sidon, which means to make a game of hunting. That's why God caused the first flood, is that man became
killing
everything just for fun, including fellow humans. The gods of Moab, which is contradictory father going in the opposite direction. The gods of Ammon, which means whose family? It's like Ishmael, you know.
Yeah.
Question his God. Question this individual's God. And with the gods of the Philistine, the Philistines, or the people that want to be considered Philistines, the Palestinians, foreign invaders who attack.
What a choice of names to pick.
Woo! Yeah, I mean, why didn't they, if they had half a brain? I mean, half a brain, they would have called themselves Canaanites. And they would have said, you know, we want the land of Canaan, and because we're Canaanites.
Well,
I mean, if they had said that, then they would have at least had a historical precedent. We only know of Canaan and Canaanites because of Yahweh's testimony, so it would be undermined there. But still, yeah, it wouldn't be a complete lie.